Chapter 3. To Create a Customer. Peter Drucker. There is a lot of competition among the world's top management gurus. But strangely, they all agree on the answer to the question, who is the most important modern management thinker? The answer is obviously Peter Drucker. Everyone agrees that he is the man who invented modern management. He was the first person to think carefully about the position of business in society. He supported the idea of giving more power to workers at a time when the boss's word was law. He saw the importance of computers before Bill Gates had learned to read. He also said that government businesses should return to the private part of the economy over 20 years before the idea changed the face of Europe. But Drucker is not just a business specialist. He has written 2 books of fiction, and he has also taught university courses on Japanese art. Even his books about business are full of ideas and information from history and literature. "How many Englishmen were gentlemen in the 19th century?" he asks in one of his books. "Not many," is his answer. He often gives examples from the works of Jane Austen and Charles Dickens to explain his ideas about company life. The truth is that Drucker is not a normal management writer. He has no real experience of business because he has spent most of his life in universities. And although he has worked in the USA for over half a century, he is not really an American. Perhaps that's why he's always been a little bit different. Drucker was born in 1909 and grew up in Vienna, Austria. When he was a teenager in the 1920s, Vienna was a city that lived in the past. Just a few years before, it had been the capital of an area that stretched from the Alps to the edge of Russia. More than 50 million people lived there. Vienna's wonderful palaces had welcomed the world's richest and most powerful leaders. Its cafes had been full of great artists and writers. Its concert halls and theatres produced some of the greatest music and plays in all of Europe. But the First World War changed all that. At the end of the war, Austria found that it had lost its power, most of its land, and nearly all of its people. By the early 1920s, Austria was a small country of just 6.5 million people, with no real place on the world stage. Certainly, Austria had changed, but its people hadn't forgotten its traditions, especially its tradition of great work in art and science. Peter Drucker's family was typical. His grandmother was a musician who had played for Gustav Mahler. His father had been a friend of Sigmund Freud. Drucker grew up in a home where people spoke 3 languages. They discussed science, books, and mathematics in the way that many modern families talk about TV and sport today. It was soon clear that the young Peter Drucker was very clever. He got excellent results at school, and at the age of 17, he decided to leave Austria and find a new life. He moved to Hamburg in the north of Germany. His father wanted him to become a full-time student at Hamburg University, but the idea was too boring for Drucker. "Students live in a dream that is 2 parts beer and 1 part sex," he said. He wanted to find out about real life. So he worked in an office job during the day and studied law in the university library in the evenings. His father was worried. He thought that his son was wasting his life, but Drucker soon proved him wrong. At the age of 20, he was already publishing his writing in important magazines. His first report was about the world economy. It was very well written and very cleverly argued. Sadly, it was also very wrong. "The world economy looks good," he wrote. "The New York Stock Exchange will almost certainly go up." The report appeared in September 1929. Just 1 month later, the New York Stock Exchange crashed. It was the worst financial disaster of the 20th century. Drucker said that after that experience, he never tried to make guesses about the financial future again. The crash of the New York Stock Exchange had a terrible effect on all the economies of the world. And one of the places that suffered most was Germany. German businesses failed. The value of German money fell. And millions of ordinary Germans lost their jobs. Some German families had to sell everything they owned, so that they could still afford to eat. Drucker was shocked by the problems that he saw. But he was even more shocked by the events that followed. It seemed that Germany's politicians could do nothing to help their people. Many ordinary Germans lost hope in their government and looked for other solutions to their problems. One person who said that he had the answer was Adolf Hitler. Support for Hitler grew as Germany's problems got worse. In 1932, Hitler and his Nazi party came to power. In the early 1930s, Drucker had moved to Frankfurt and had taken a job as a journalist for a newspaper. He was in an excellent position to see the changes in German life, and he was frightened by what he saw. But what should he do? Should he stay and fight the Nazis, or should he leave the country and find a new life somewhere else? It was soon clear that he had no choice. Drucker was working on a book about a writer and thinker called Julius Stahl. He knew that Stahl's ideas were very different from the ideas of people in the Nazi Party. When the book was published, he was very worried. In fact, he was right to be worried. The Nazis hated the book so much that they burnt it. Drucker realized that he had to leave the country. In 1933, Drucker moved to London. There he worked for banks or other financial organizations during the day and continued to write in the evenings. But the news from Germany got worse and worse, and he became more and more worried about the political situation in Europe. But he also had some happy times in London. One day he was on his way to catch a train at a London station when he saw a beautiful young woman on the moving stairs next to him. She was going up, and he was going down. But it wasn't just that she was beautiful. He also recognized her. It was a woman he had known in Hamburg, called Doris. When he got to the bottom of the moving stairs, he decided to follow her. So he ran up after her. But when he got halfway up, he saw that she was now coming down. She had also recognized him, and had decided to follow him. When they at last caught each other, they talked excitedly about the old times in Germany and arranged to see each other again. A few years later, Drucker and Doris were married. It was a partnership that lasted for the rest of the century. While he was in London, Drucker thought very hard about the events in Germany. Why had the Nazis come to power? He asked himself. He decided that it was the result of changes in the societies and the economies of European countries. The modern world had brought big changes to the way that people lived. In Europe and America, people had left the farms and the countryside and moved to the cities to find work in factories and offices. The old ideas of society didn't mean anything to these people anymore. The problem was that there were no good new ideas to replace them. He felt that ordinary people had lost hope in the future. In Germany, the solution to this problem was Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. But Drucker was sure that this problem could be solved in other ways. He put his ideas into a book called The End of Economic Man. It was published in 1939, just before the start of the Second World War. It was an immediate success among certain kinds of people. The British politician Winston Churchill, who had not yet become a war leader, read the book and said that it was excellent. He said that all top soldiers in the British Army should receive a copy to help them to understand the international situation. Drucker later learned that they received his book in a package that also contained the famous children's story Alice in Wonderland. So, what did that say about the world's opinion of his ideas? At the end of the 1930s, Peter and Doris Drucker crossed the Atlantic and set up home in the USA. Drucker soon found a job as a teacher at Bennington College in Vermont. But he didn't stop thinking about the ideas in his first book. He decided that many of the problems of the modern world were problems that had been created by business. Business had lots of power in modern society, but it did not always use this power responsibly. He thought that companies needed to think more carefully about their purpose and about their duty to look after their workers. But if business had caused the problems, then business could also solve them. In his next book, The Future of Economic Man, he said that the future of society was all about the future of organizations. Drucker wanted to find out more about big business organizations. But as the world was at war, he knew he had to wait. Every big company in the USA was working as hard as possible to produce equipment for the army. Drucker realized that managers had no time to talk to a university teacher like him. Then, one day in 1943, he was sitting in his office at Bennington College when he received a phone call.
"Hello, Mr. Drucker," said the voice.
"I'm calling from General Motors. Would like to talk to you about something. Can you come for a meeting?" 2 days later, Drucker visited General Motors' offices. There he met one of the top managers, Donaldson Brown.
"We've read your books," Brown told him, "and people at GM are interested in your ideas. We're mostly technical and financial people here, but we're asking the same questions as you. What is the place of big business in society? How should a big organization be run? That sort of thing."
Drucker couldn't believe his ears.
"Well, obviously I'm very happy to hear that," he said, "but how can I help you?"
"We have to start planning for the years after the war's finished," Brown explained.
"So we'd like you to come to GM and look at our work. We'd like you to think about our organization and our methods, and then write a report for top management."
"That sounds very interesting," said Drucker. "But I already have a job at Bennington College."
"That's okay," said Brown.
"We don't want to employ you. We want someone from outside. You can keep your job at Bennington, but, of course, we'll pay you some extra money."
For Drucker, it was a great opportunity. General Motors was the most powerful company in the world. Drucker also wanted to meet GM's boss, Alfred Sloan. Sloan and his ideas were already famous in the business world. Drucker had heard that Sloan kept tight central control of the company's direction and its finances. But he also knew that Sloan allowed GM's managers to be independent, and he liked to listen to their opinions. When Drucker met him for the first time, he saw immediately that Sloan believed strongly in duty.
"Mr. Drucker," said Sloan, "you have probably heard that I didn't want you to study General Motors. I saw no reason for your work. But my managers disagreed with me, and so we took a decision to invite you here. This means that it is my duty to make sure that you do the best possible job. Come and see me at any time. Ask me any question you like. You can attend our meetings, and you can make suggestions. I only ask that you do not tell people our secrets.